when people come in, they'll be coming in. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I like the agenda. That was, I think, good.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of, you know, what everyone's kind of doing right now and focusing on, and that the discussion is always good to kind of hear what everyone, you know, is doing, but also listen to what others are doing and give support. So that was my thing. So do you want me to start? But
David, I can't remember what agency, David, you're calling in from. You're muted, yeah.
TJE Senior Life, Chicago.
Okay, yeah, of course. So, thank you. I'm just changing this.
Oh, yeah, you want us to put...
Yes, David. Oh, sorry,
I'm going to say you want me to put West Palm Beach in there? Yes. And you know it.
Mm-hmm. No, okay. Yeah, but David might not know. I just couldn't remember, and I went to find you, and I didn't find you on my search, so I wanted to make sure we knew where you're calling in from. Jen knew. Okay, that's it for me.
I know. I was saying, David, that before we just got on, I've got the word that Chicago has been shut down. So starting Monday morning. And I think we're going to get some more from what I'm hearing. Actually, Allison Stark was saying there's going to be some announcements this afternoon about, I think, day programming and other things. So 2:30 will be a big call here.
I never dreamed at our last meeting that it would be, never.
That we'd be going backwards and
backwards.
Worse. Backwards.
Never.
Yeah. You know, I had a board meeting on Tuesday night, and, you know, one of the things we've been talking about, we've been lucky enough to get some technical assistance, and we've been doing scenario planning. And one of the things that I, you know, expressed to the board was, you know, I have always been in a phase of, okay, we were in virtual programming, we were doing, it was great and awesome. And then we were figuring out how to transition back into in-person. I don't think I ever wrapped my head around that I would have to then reclose programs again. And so that is like really hard for me, that we finally have gotten our, you know, our kids back into our therapeutic day school and things are going well. And
it's hard for the kids. It's hard for the families. I mean, it's just hard.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, I think I didn't prepare enough. And so, you know, this has taught me now, and some of the things that I'm moving forward with my directors and managers are that, like, we need some, like, three scenarios of what's going to happen in the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. Not one. We need three plans. Mm-hmm. Because I certainly, you know, I never imagined this.
Yeah.
So, but it looks like that's what's going to happen, is we're going to shut down until after winter break. That's sad.
And what about I know senior life? How are you responding to this news?
Well, we have different operations. We have assisted living. We have the Lieberman Center for Health and Rehabilitation, which is a 240-bed nursing home. And so, you know, they have very specific protocol. My business unit is independent housing, affordable housing. So the most that we can do is communicate, change our signage, keep the signage fresh, be visible and be actively engaged when we're outside of the office and encounter residents who happen to be outside walking or just coming and going. Because it's independent housing, we really cannot make mandates other than when you're in the common areas, you will wear a mask or it's a lease violation. And if people come into the building as your guests and they're not wearing masks, especially if they're belligerent about it, it's a lease violation on you. You know, from a, there are customers there, you know, we're here to serve them in so many ways, yet we have to balance this requirement and the knowledge of science with trying to protect them. And even some of the 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds are telling me this is going to disappear after the election.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just because they're older doesn't mean they're necessarily wiser, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
It is.
Yeah, I know.
It's crazy that something so basic as science is debated.
Yeah.
Well, it's not so crazy when you had a president that modeled that. Like, you know, that's what's crazy, is that our president was not behind the science. That's what I think was crazy about this whole thing and what's made it so much more difficult and why it's been so prolonged. And I'm not even political. I'm just saying it. When in the very, very beginning of this pandemic, a friend of mine who's a doctor in a hospital here in New York, he went to some, I don't know, training, a virtual training, and he sent it to me because he thought it would be so interesting. And basically they talked about all the failures from the past pandemics, 1918, you know, all the different ones. And what was the common theme was that there was no leadership. When there was no leadership, the pandemic continued to spread. And I feel like there was no leadership. There was no national mandate. There was no one saying what was the right thing that everyone should be doing. And this is the result of it. Every state did something different and people travel in between states and, you know, you can't contain it. So
it's hard. Well, that can lead into the agenda. Okay. Talking about the winter and safety and protocols. You know, we have been doing a lot of just, you know, deep thoughts and, you know, looking at what we need to do to obviously keep everyone safe first and foremost. But also, you know, there's a lot of logistics that go on with putting these safety protocols in place. And if we are going to one extreme on the other side, we're basically going to have no one to work eventually because everyone has been in contact with someone or know someone and all of that. So, you know, we've been doing a lot of work around what makes sense and talking to all of our, you know, city and county health departments and, you know, continuously, you know, weekly just changing up what we need to do. And so, you know, we've done a lot of that. We personally have, in the last 3 weeks seen an increase in the amount of people who are positive, who have been exposed. You know, for a while we were like, one here or there, certain situations. Last week I felt like I was a commander in chief. So shit, a minute something else was coming in and navigating and figuring out. But you know, I think things are calmer this week. But I think it's, you know, really important to make sure that the protocols now reflect being inside. That is going to be for us crucial because we've been trying to do a lot of our adult day programming outside and even our residents, you know, people can come visit outside and, you know, we can take walks and we can do things. And, you know, we're headed into Chicago winter now, right? Even though it was 70 at the first part of the week, it's getting cold. And so, you know, we know that the inside is going to be important for us to make safe. And so we've done those changeovers by bringing in filters in our, you know, air duct systems and cleaning them out, as well as now we have portable, you know, air purifiers in every one of our residents' bedrooms. We are trying to keep the windows open, even if it's just a little bit. And you know, during the day when they're not in there to kind of keep the windows even more open. We got some little heaters too, so that we can make sure even in the family room area that we can keep the window open, but just keep it a little bit warm. You know, we're coming up with, you know, different things to do program wise. And so we're upping our virtual programming for our adult rec stuff and have come up with some great ideas using some grant money to bring, you know, different artist in to do stuff through Zoom, but also a lot of exercise stuff. I mean, we had the superhero exercise program starting last week, and it involves, you know, people choosing different characters and doing different things. So like fun stuff, that it's not just boring. Let's do some sit down, you know, chair exercise, stuff like that. We're spending a little extra money hiring some professionals to do some stuff to change it up a little bit. And, you know, I think it's a constant looking at what you need to do to, you know, have the least exposure to people. And so our residents were able to go home, and they were
in the beginning.
And until about 3 weeks ago, they were allowed to go visit and, you know, have a day visit with their families as long as they went and visited their families and they weren't out and doing things. We put a stop to that 3 weeks ago, as well as now we looked at what the protocols are going to be for the holidays. And so, you know, for Thanksgiving, if you leave, it's like coming back in again. That means you have to quarantine for 14 days and have two negative tests. And we put kind of a limit on if you leave on Wednesday or Thursday, you have to be back by Sunday. So everyone's kind of in the same schedule. And if you decide to stay out longer, there has to be individual discussions about what that looks like and how you would be able to come back into the house. So just rethinking all that. I don't know what you guys have done.
That was one of the questions that I had, Jennifer. When I first sent, I think, a question to Lisa, we were not on the upswing. And the agency was still saying isolate 14 days. And the parents were saying, why not give them a test, wait 3 days, and, you know, let them come back. Well, in the course of the couple of weeks, I mean, we're fortunate. We're in Florida. We don't have, at least we can be outside.
Yeah.
But they're back to the 14 days. I mean,
yeah,
no question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is not having the outside. I don't know what it's going to be like. You know, when this happened in March, at least we were starting to have nice weather, and we got through the summer, and it's November now.
And we're all completely exhausted by it. Like, that's what's going on. It's not like there was never really, really novelty, but you were busy. You were in action mode and, you know, you had to do things. And now it's like, oh, not again.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with you. I think that's the feeling. And as I said before, it's like, you know, you kind of go through phases of things, right? And you think things are just going to get better. And now we're like, oh yeah, that's not happening. We're going back now. And so, you know, it's that, again, that mindset and having those plans in place for it. But, we're going back to square one with the safety stuff. We are. We have to.
But at least you know what you're doing, I guess, now. There's a little difference, right?
Yeah.
We're having some behavioral situations with people. You know, we do have people in our program with mental illness, but all under control. And we've had some incidents that, I'm sure just because they don't have that daily structure, although we're doing things, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. We're experiencing and having to develop, you know, more real structure in our supported independent living program than we anticipated. It's been, you know, more visits to the therapist, more activities, more one-on-one supervision with people who didn't really need it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the hard part. And I mean, we can skip ahead, you know, to number three and go back, but the social emotional piece is huge.
Huge.
And it's not just our residents and our, you know, seniors and people living in our, you know, homes. It's really now affecting, obviously, our staff, and the families who are not able to see their loved ones. And I don't think
And the leaders and you all. I mean, you know, that's it's so hard.
You know, yesterday I actually for my director team brought in a social worker to kind of do a session yesterday. You know, as I told you, the last couple of weeks have been really difficult, you know, for, you know, and not just residential, but for my therapeutic day school, like, you know, my director, my assistant director, like everyone has a lot of weight on them, right? They are not only continuing to do the day-to-day stuff and keeping everything the best it can be and, you know, supporting their staff and families, but they feel very much that the pressure's on them that if anything happens, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weight on them. And as much as I can, you know, continue to tell them we're doing everything possible and, you know, things are going to happen and people are going to get sick, it is still a tremendous amount of pressure. And I will tell you, my staff love their staff and their kids and their adults like they're their own family. That's who we are, right? That's who we are as an organization. And so it's a layer deeper. And so I did bring someone in yesterday and it was just, hey, she's here to like talk through some stuff with us so that we can really process what we're feeling and understand that, you know, as much as you think this is on you, it's not. It's on all of us, and what can we do to support each other? And so I think they were very grateful for that yesterday.
And was it a good group discussion? Was she able to elicit a lot of, you know, people?
Yeah, I think at first it was quiet, but she got everyone talking. And I just think by the end, it was a little more light than we're coming in and we're, you know, I didn't mean it to be like a therapy session.
Right.
But it was just more of a time we can be together and just talk, and every, you know, we did some breathing stuff where let's just reset right now.
Right.
Let's turn our phones off. I did it at 5:30. Let's turn our phones off for 1 hour, you know, and let's focus on us. So, you know,
that's great.
I worry. I need people to understand that our families who have kids at home are struggling. And so how are we going to support them? As well as, I agree, we've seen some of the, I think we have a different population than you do, you know, Andrea, but like we have seen, you know, a lot of our adults with intellectual disabilities, we forget that they have social emotional stuff too.
Right.
You know, that they're feeling this and that sometimes they're not even understanding what's going on. And so we've started using some social workers to do some Zoom groups. We have a girls group going on and we have a boys club going on. And we're working with we have a behavioral therapist who's been working on some of that stuff with our residents too now. We kind of took a step back with everything and we thought getting them back in. And then we realized, wow, we need to like, realize that, you know, because we were shut down. And when we reopened, and we're like, well, we got to go back to what we were serving them before and what we were doing. And you know, we kind of forgot, you know, like, so thinking about that. And David, I don't know if you know, but on a Federation call last week, there has been $1 million set aside for social emotional emergency funds now. For our social service agencies in the Chicago area. And so in the next month or so, I think there's going to be some focus groups around how that money could be used, particularly just for staff and families and participants for social emotional stuff. I don't know if you know that.
That's good to know. I'll check into that. It's interesting to hear what you're saying, Jennifer, because without being in close touch, we're mirroring what you're doing. Next Thursday, I've got a Zoom set up with one of our lead social workers with my management team to just talk about identifying issues with residents, how to respond, how to do a lateral handoff, how to interpret when someone's having, you know, when it's actually a mental incident rather than mm-hmm. someone just upset, and just taking us through the steps, and then also to kind of do a check-in with us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's great. I think that's important, and to open up, you know, the conversations, because mm-hmm. I think it's always still, as much as people will talk about social emotional, I think it's still like people forget and don't talk about it, you know. I did some consulting yesterday with the Federation in Washington, D.C. Around camp. And what's happening for next summer around their camps. And one of the main things I told them that we're working on with our, you know, JCC here and with Keshet here is that we are looking at some specific questions that really focus on social emotional health and things mm-hmm. that have happened in the past year with, you know, a lot of these kids not being in school is going to be really interesting, specifically for some of our campers who now have had a year with no socialization, and no real behavior plans and all of that. And so, you know, that was one of the things I told them they have to focus on as they're, you know, talking about their intake forms. You know, I can do intake forms in my sleep.
Such a vulnerable population.
But yeah. Right. I can do it in my sleep, but I'm like, and I'm redoing our intake forms to really, really think about, you know, some of our campers that even we know that have been with us for years, right? That
new, are going new to questions, have, right?
Yeah, a different level of social emotional needs for the summer. And, you know, how are you going to be able to staff that too? Do you have, you know, your social worker that you typically have for camper care, or you're going to bring someone in that is specifically going to focus on staff and camper care?
Yeah.
So, I know, a different subject, but the same thing. this is a real, real issue that is not going to go away easily. And, you know, I will talk, I put employment on our agenda. And the reason I put employment on our agenda, that leads into that social emotional stuff too. We have residents who've had jobs for years and years who lost their jobs right now, are not able to go to their jobs. And it is heartbreaking, right? I mean, I am blessed that we are providing them with incredible day programming, thank God. We were able to bring our Godot program into our,
right,
our residential homes. The state's paying for it. And their days are being filled, but they really need to be out working. And, yeah, you know, that's not going to be so easy right now. If they're going back to their old jobs, that's one thing. I don't even think those jobs are really going to be open or appropriate.
They're not open anymore. You know, everything's shut down again.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's an area now when I talk to people, to funders or foundations or, you know, donors, I said, I particularly it's around my adult programming, right? I need money to have job coaches and customized employment, you know, discovery stuff. And it's going to be real and it's going to last for a while. And I do think it's going to put a lot of social emotional toll on people.
Ruben right now is in the process of really looking for, and he's actually talking with funders to talk, to discuss this exact same issue. And we want to get a grant that we can then distribute to, you know, network agencies about disabilities and employment. So just stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Andrea, did you want to say something in response?
I did. You saw my mouth going.
I did. And then I talked. I'm sorry.
No. If it's possible, because... to put this aside, just for God willing, it'll happen one of these days. A question that came to me that I was asked to bring up at this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We are blessed really with a number of professional volunteers. They come to Florida, they're retired, and we vet them, and we are truly blessed with having them. A number of the programs that they do for people, and they're continuing on Zoom now, so it's lovely, but they become expensive. We have someone who does flower arranging, so we bring in fresh flowers, and now they're Zooming, so all of our locations. And they're making challah with someone, and we're getting the dough, and then they do all the rest. How do you budget, not COVID related, how do you budget for the cost of operating these programs that are led by the professional volunteers?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a volunteer, you know, program, and we have a lot of volunteers. I would say, you know, some of the problem is they can't be in person, a lot of these people, right? And so we've been setting up some sessions on Zoom for them to do stuff. We did have some of our volunteers doing programming in our like rec stuff with our younger kids, and it was a little bit easier. It was outside for a little bit. But we don't have a lot of volunteers right now for COVID times.
So, but it's not even their equipment. It's the tools that they want to.
Talking about the funding. Where do we get the stuff?
I'm talking about the funding. The funding to allow the volunteers to do what they really want to provide.
You need to pay for the challah and the flowers.
We do it two ways. One is it comes from, we budget through programming We do it, you know, listen, we also are a different type of organization. We're similar to like a JCFS in that we have a therapeutic day school, and we have a camp, and we have, you know, adult day programming and residential. And so particularly during, you know, the budgeting time, we look at what activities that we may want them to do, and we budget for it. We also have, we'll donate things, right?
Tell me more about that, because that was part of our
greeting cards. And so our...
Jen, don't be
can't
frozen.
Hear you.
Don't be frozen.
Yeah, you're frozen.
Oh, you were frozen, sorry.
You were frozen.
Oh, I was frozen too?
Okay. Yeah, everyone's frozen, uh-huh.
All right, am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay, good. So we would, you know, when we would budget through, you know, the programs. But there are particular projects that we do. For instance, right now we were trying to find some stuff for our adult day program, you know, to do. Art is a huge thing in our Godot program, huge. And so we took some of the art pieces and turned them into cards, greeting cards for the holidays. And at the on the back of the cards, just like the bio of the artist and stuff. And so we asked someone to fund it. We asked someone if, you know, they'd be willing to buy the greeting cards. It wasn't hugely expensive. And, you know, it's given the opportunity for them now to package these cards, take orders, you know, set them up for delivery. They're going around and delivering them. It's a great activity to do. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those like social enterprise things, as you want to call them, or projects, I asked someone to do them. I know people I can call, a lot of them even parents, and be like, do you have a couple $1,000s? Like, we really would like to do this, you know, and do it that way. But really typically just budgeting through the programs for some of that stuff. And sometimes the volunteers will, I know we have some volunteers who will be like, I'll buy the stuff for it.
Well, that we know we have to go that way.
It's tough because, you know, you want to put, if you put that in operations, it's like, it's hard, right? You put it in your budget as operations. It costs money to do all that stuff.
It does.
It's like volunteer, you know, it's the same thing as we get into the situation where, you know, we have to pay our adults to do some of the projects, right? But we're buying the materials for the projects, you know.
Exactly.
It's hard.
Right.
It's hard. I think they should be paid. You can come in, Dominic.
I also think that some of these donors that you probably have in West Palm Beach would want to sponsor the flower making program or sponsor the Shabbat challah, especially the Shabbat challah making program, you know, over the course
of
the
year. Well, that's, I think that they do. I think they like knowing that their donations are, you know,
right, going specific.
Towards a specific.
And there could even be a little card in every single flower, you know, you hope you're well, the Smith Family Foundation or whatever, you know, I just put my name in, like I have one, I don't. But, you know,
but if you did, you would fund it.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah. And then we were wondering if we should have, and I'm a little worried about that, like have people specifically donate supplies. I'm a little worried about that.
Why?
I don't know.
So the junior, the women's board or junior board of Federation.
Junior league. Right? Oh, board. Yeah.
Yeah. Their board asked me to come speak about what they were just asking different leaders to come speak about what's going on in COVID and whatever I was this month. And they asked, you know, if there's something they can collect to give to us. So not money, but like, you know, for their family.
Yeah.
And I said art supplies, and I had my program directors give me a list of stuff because it's expensive,
it's
the
canvases,
the paints and all that stuff. And they have collected a ton of stuff and they're getting ready to deliver it to us. And I think it's great.
Yeah. Women's Philanthropy of Federations. They really do like to give to, you know, their JFSs.
That's, and
CJEs.
Right.
I mean, do you even run programs, David, in your, or are you more management of the services, of
so
the
we have,
housing?
We have a volunteer director and volunteer program that's funded independently that works with each of the agencies within CJE. My department, we have an activities budget for each building. And I have an activities director, so it's a lot of coordination. The volunteers are not allowed in the buildings at this time, so the volunteer director and coordinator are finding ways to still get them engaged. As an aside, since we're not spending volunteer funds on renting buses and buying tickets to Ravinia, an outdoor concert venue, to take residents there, I purchased two additional outdoor benches for one of the buildings and had them installed and took that out of the activities fund because that's something that the residents can do and enjoy.
Yes.
So, fortunately, you know, the organization has a lot of depth to it to where we can figure things out together and share resources.
Mm-hmm. You're a flush organization, right? You've got resource, you know, you're not in the red.
There was a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Hinsdale that is being sold, and I think the proceeds are going to be coming to us.
Amazing.
What?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's from our development vice president. That's all she does.
Well, that's going to be a lot of money, a lot of kesef, because those houses are worth a lot of money.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, listen, we can't do it.
Because the social workers, I mean, everything is costing more. We didn't realize that we would be spending, to this point, probably $800,000 in PPE.
Exactly. Uh-huh. You're right.
Yeah, the PPE is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. It is. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of school districts ended up not opening up in person. I was on a state call a couple months ago when they were, you know, starting to transition back into, you know, school. And a lot of the superintendents across the state said that they weren't opening because they really couldn't afford it. I mean, to open some of the schools were going to be millions of dollars just to make them safe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fine in a district over here in the North Shore, but, you know, some of the districts, the smaller districts, didn't have that money to pay for the PPE and what they needed to do to the bathrooms or any of that stuff. It's crazy.
So FEMA, if you go to, I think it's FEMA.gov, they're also accepting claims that are COVID related. So if you, our CFO created a new charge line indicator at the end of all of our cost codes, so that whenever we have an expenditure that could be considered PPE related, COVID related, whether it's PPE or overtime, we code it that way. And then we, once a month, we pull everything together to do another FEMA claim. Mm.
That's good advice. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Really good to know. Okay, good.
You're saving the best for last, David.
Yeah. So that was like all that was on my real agenda. I thought it was good to kind of talk through some of the stuff that was happening around, you know, here and, you know, the realities are now moving into a different season of cold, but also a different season of being on lockdown again. Yeah.
So I don't know where everyone else was that said they were going to be on the call, but I say this and I mean it. Every small group is a gift, and you know, it's good because then you really get to know people in a different way when it's a smaller group. So
Well, David, one day when we can see each other, we should definitely get together in person.
Oh, absolutely.
Have a drink. Well, you two might be able to see each other sooner than us, but still, it's nice.
Yes.
So I didn't know if you wanted to say anything, Andrea. I know Jennifer wants to listen to the mayor talk write the mayor's
name. No, I appreciate just commiserating. I think you gave me some nice thoughts, and I enjoy seeing you folks. It's good for me too.
Yeah, I'm excited for next month. We'll have some. I have some good thoughts.
February.
Yeah.
February 11th.
Oh, February? God, it's so long. Okay.
Do you want to do it earlier? We can.
We can talk about it. If you guys want to email and get together earlier, you can let me know.
Whatever. But I'm just thinking about how you had said, it's been so long that you know, like, Andrea, you have nice weather, but we don't. And then everybody had nice weather. And son of a gun, we're back to Chicago having cold and West Palm Beach having nice weather. I mean, this is just,
it's crazy
what it is. Yeah.
Right. Crazy.
And you know, everyone, especially now, is jealous of Florida, even though I know you just had the hurricanes. But, you know, it, when you think about the cold winter months, I mean, Jersey too. I mean, you know, it's going to be cold. And, you know, a lot of our communities in this network are going into cold weather. And, you know, at least you all can still be outside social distancing.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really a real blessing, as it were. Yeah. We all should be moving to Miami. Or West Palm Beach.
David Pritzker is getting on now in a few minutes. So.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Enjoy.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Bye. We'll see you guys
soon. Bye.